It's said that a question that Americans ask each other a lot is, what do you do? We're trying to figure out who we are and gain an orientation toward another person. But equally, and perhaps more appropriately, the question would be, how do you do? How do you do your life? And the question comes to us in December, especially poignantly, how do you do December? And it's every way imaginable, of course, joyfully, solemnly, heartbreakingly, lonely, busily, nutcrackerly. For our Jewish brothers and sisters, menorally, we roll along. Now you'll see two different kinds of menorahs for sale and in people's homes. The seven-branched menorah is akin to the one Hebrew priests once lit in the temple in Jerusalem many centuries ago. It's the seven-branched menorah that is the symbol of the nation of Israel today. The Hanukkah menorah, on the other hand, has eight branches and one helper candle. The miracle of the oil in the temple is honored in this fashion. Oil that should have lasted only one day to rededicate the temple after the Syrian forces occupying Palestine were driven out. The oil lasted instead 8 days, allowing time for a new oil to be imported and then lit. Hanukkah has never been one of the most important of the Jewish holidays, but has gained importance due to its position in December near a holiday that always overshadows it. From the early 1700s, 170s before the Common Era, Jewish rebels reclaimed the temple. And it seems to me that it is significant that the forces driven out were Syrian, because today in Syria, another battle is raging with another tyrant being challenged. Last night was the first night of Hanukkah, and on that first night, the helper candle is lit. And then this candle, most appropriately. And the menorah is to be placed in the window. It's not to have any other purpose. It's not to be used for reading or for illumination. It's to show forth the miracle of the season. Ritually, we roll along through December. A ritual being not merely a routine, not just repetitive, but an action or series of actions from which we derive a sense of satisfaction. A ritual may come from the past, or it can be more contemporary. We can invent a ritual within our own family. But of course, a ritual that comes from the past, that comes through the centuries, that comes to us through generations of families, well, those rituals have added significance. Next Sunday, I'm going to be telling you the true story of a menorah, and you can decide whether that story is miraculous or not. But today, recognizing the many friends we have in this season, I light one candle here. For ritual, which sustains and guides us. Lights on the house, lights on the tree, lighting candles on the menorah. In the dark of winter, light becomes our friend. Veni, Sancte Spiritus et emite celitos, lucis tue radium. Veni, Pater Paperum. Veni dator munerum, veni lumen cor deum. Come, Holy Spirit, and send from heaven the ray of your light. Come, Father of paupers. Come, donor of gifts. Come, light of hearts. And of course, through history, light has been both physically present to us and also a metaphor. A metaphor points to an activity or another word or a phrase using another word or another phrase, and there's not a literal connection between the two, but rather a relationship. And the metaphor can disclose that which has been hidden or unrecognized. As one writer put it, clarifying the meaning of metaphor, for Adam Smith, the invisible hand is a metaphor, not a transcendent appendage. And while we're speaking of economics and conjuring up the power of Adam Smith's metaphor of the invisible hand and how it affects our lives today, we can think of another metaphor that is captivating our attention right now, the fiscal cliff. Not a fiscal speed bump, not a fiscal question or challenge, but cliff. And we may be assured that everyone is paying attention. So when I think of December, I think of the metaphors which accompany us, but I also think of the metaphor of friends of the season, such as light. Carl Jung wrote, "As far as we can discern, the sole purpose of human existence is to kindle a light in the darkness of mere being." We think of how many years and under what circumstances Jewish people have lighted candles on the menorah. In fear of their lives, in the midst of persecution, the tradition has gone on. I light a second candle for light. Another great friend of the season. And another great friend, of course, and our choir has given us an indication of that, can be music. And I say can be because certain musical pieces can be anything but friendly. My father had a dramatic aversion to Irving Berlin's White Christmas. He was normally a rather quiet man, but White Christmas would send him into unseasonable-like proclamations. Having White Christmas as your least favorite song of the season is a bit problematic because Bing Crosby's recording of that song remains the biggest selling single of all time, with an estimated sale in excess of 50 million copies worldwide. And as it is written so wisely, when it comes to White Christmas or truly dozens of other seasonal songs, you can run, but you cannot hide. Even so, certain carols and pieces of music associated with the holidays are indeed old friends. From Messiah sing-alongs to Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, to Hava Nagila, to Shalom Haverim, to some of the great songs of the season, we turn for solace, sustenance, for joy, and for sorrow. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was first sung by Judy Garland in the movie Meet Me in St. Louis, and Vincent Minnelli, the director, felt that the words in the song were so depressing that he asked songwriter Hugh Martin to change some of them. And so Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is very soulful and wistful and even sad, could actually have been depressing. Having affirmed music as one of our old friends of the season, we light a candle. In recognition and celebration of the songs of our lives. And now we must add books and movies, because these too are old friends. There are traditions that we have. For some of us, making our way through the season without a child's Christmas in Wales would be a sad subtraction. And who can imagine going through the season without at least a passing reference to A Christmas Carol? I think this poem, A Merry Literary Christmas by Alice Lowe, puts it very well. When Christmas shopping time draws nigh, and I am faced with gifts to buy, I think about one relative who always had one gift to give. Year after year, her present came, and every year it was the same. While other gifts were round and fat, their secrets hidden, hers was flat. Rectangular, the corners square, I knew exactly what was there. I'd pass it by without a look. My aunt had sent another book. I'd only open it to write a thank you that was too polite. But every year when Christmas went, I'd read the book my aunt had sent, and looking back, I realized each gift was treasure in disguise. So now it's time to write her here a thank you note that's quite sincere. So thanks for Alice and Sarah Crewe, for Christopher Robin and Piglet too, for Little Nell and William Tell and Peter, Wendy, and Tinkerbell, for Tom and Jim and Huck, for Robinson Crusoe and Dab Dab the Duck, for Meg and Joe and Johnny Crow and Papa Geppetto's Pinocchio, for Mary Poppins and Rat and Toad, King Arthur and Dorothy's Yellow Brick Road, for Kipling's Kim and Tales from Grimm, and Ferdinand and Babar and Tiny Tim. I love them all. I'm glad I met them. They're with me still. I won't forget them. So I'll give books on Christmas Day, though I know what all my nieces will say, our aunt has sent another book. To this day, I think, honestly, my favorite gifts of the past, and I would reckon the present also, are books. I can call to mind in an instant, or, well, given what's happening, six instants strung together, a number of the wonderful books Vicki, David, and Becky have given me over the years. And of course, it was Dickens' A Christmas Carol, a slender little volume that many credit with a resurgence of enthusiasm for Christmas in both England and America. That wonderful book where everyone from George C. Scott to Mr. Magoo to Kermit the Frog has had a role or another in this holiday classic. So it seems very fitting to light a candle for our old friend, books. So as it's getting a little closer to noon, you might be getting a little hungry. Or I like the British expression, peckish. So what about the food of the holidays and the drink? Well, latkes or potato pancakes are wonderful treats for Hanukkah. And many remember with joy and pleasure those tasty morsels. And Hanukkah gelt. I remember milk chocolate wrapped in coins. And drink, eggnog and others of the season. Humorist Calvin Trillin wrote some rather unkind remarks about fruitcake based on an interview, real or imagined. There's nothing dangerous about fruitcakes as long as people send them along without eating them. If people ever started eating them, I suppose there might be need for federal legislation. The question is asked, how about people who buy fruitcakes for themselves? Well, now that you mention it, nobody in the history of the United States has ever bought a fruitcake for himself or herself. People have bought turnips for themselves. People have bought any number of Brussels sprouts for themselves, but no one has ever bought a fruitcake. Does that tell you a little something about fruitcakes? The food and drink of the season still warm hearts, tummies, and spirits. And immediately my memory plunges me back to my childhood and shopping with my parents at local malls in Kansas City, at Hickory Farms for cheese balls. Keep your brie and your camembert. Just give me a Hickory Farm cheese ball and some saltine crackers and throw in a Ritz or two to just enliven your taste buds. So the food and the drink of the season reveal us to be precisely who we are, material beings. Let's not be ashamed of it or cast aspersions upon our identity. This is material. This is material. The food and drink that sustains us and enlivens us, all material. The flame itself, physical. All these things reveal our identity. And so we light a candle for our good friend, the food and drink of the season. A sixth friend, Hanukkah, solstice, and Christmas cards from people far and near, family and friends. Now, Hallmark cards has an appeal to us. It talks about using holiday cards to connect with people we haven't communicated with. And this year, Hallmark offers more than 2,700 Christmas card designs. Isn't that a little over the top? Cheryl Gaines, Hallmark editorial director, says Hallmark has a wide variety of Christmas messages to fit any relationship needs. Now, that's a statement that just is begging to be challenged. So, really, Hallmark, what about these special messages? My tire was thumping. I thought it was flat. When I looked at the tire, I noticed your cat. Sorry. Heard your wife left you. How upset you must be. But don't fret about it. She moved in with me. You brought religion into my life. I never believed in hell till I met you. Congratulations on your promotion. Before you go, would you like to take this knife out of my back? You'll probably need it again. I'm so miserable without you, it's almost like you're here. You were such a good friend that if we were on a sinking ship and there was only one life jacket, I'd miss you heaps and think of you often. Of course, many of the cards that come our way are touching and revealing. They do connect us with people that we haven't seen for a long time. Like our Sunday collection, they are often gratefully received and deeply appreciated. Sometimes the annual holiday letter is the only way we still connect with friends from holidays past. So for all the teasing that I do, I will still gladly and gratefully light a candle for our friend, the cards of the season, whether they come through the mail or electronically. Our old friends thus far, our friends of the season, have been ritual, light, music, books, food, holiday greeting cards. Six friends to which we'll now add a seventh, not a metaphor this time, though, as we honor and remember our real friends and families. The season, with its music, its services of faith and celebration, its special meals, theater, call us into communion with those most central to our lives, upon whose friendship and love we depend to center and soften our days. As candles burn low or out, the light of this candle most often endures. For when the music fades, when words blur on the page or their meaning seems shallow, trivial, when food is the last thing we desire, when cards arrive more sporadically, when rituals seem empty and light is less, friends and family are recognized to be enduring, faithful, and solicitous of our being well and our well-being. In honor of these very real beings who inhabit our lives, I light our seventh candle, a candle of friendship and love. You might well imagine that if you were crafting the sermon yourself, you would feel that it reached its crescendo here with an affirmation that the greatest of all of our old friends are not ones of metaphor, but are truly and finally people whose lives embrace and touch our own. However, I would seek to honor each candle burning here, just as on the menorah, all the candles burn with equal importance. I think our friends burn equally through our season. And in the course of a lifetime of Decembers, in fact, even in one December, we find particular candles burning with different degrees of intensity, bestowing upon us varying measures of light and heat. The blessing upon us is that we have so many friends who present themselves in their unique manifestations. On the menorah, the candles burn. By the time the holiday ends, all are glowing. Our many friends of the season likewise burn for us. So come Dasher and Dancer and cheese balls galore. Come eggnog and fruitcake, and yes, I'd like more. May candles burn bright for us. May our nights offer solace to us. And may the miracles around and within us guide us to that perfect light. For reasons that became almost painfully obvious at the 9 o'clock service, I have asked Vicki to share with us some final words as we conclude our service today.
Good morning. When Mark asked me yesterday to write something for today's service, I was struck by an article that I had seen on the web this week. Many of you may be aware that this last Wednesday, Congress passed a law to remove lunatic from all federal law, indicating the word is outdated and doesn't reflect current sensibilities. Most likely, this is a good decision, even though there are some who would argue our government is already irreparably filled with lunacy, if not lunatics. Yet we all know words are hurtful, and whenever possible, it is right to remove them from our lexicon. At the same time, some harsh language, while not particularly flattering, can be useful. The word forget comes to mind. I frequently forget my friends' birthdays, and while I'm not proud of this fact, it remains true. And I can be forgetful about other things, too. And calling a spade has at least some chance of embarrassing me into better behavior. But there is one form of forget that is too painful for even me to endure. Forgotten. There isn't one single person who has walked this earth who wants to be forgotten. We are each driven to leave some legacy of our presence, whether it is done with misguided acts of horror or expressed with tongue-in-cheek humor akin to the latter-day renditions of the military graffiti, "Kilroy was here." Whether it is the desperately written messages victims of World War II's concentration camps scribbled on scraps of paper and hid in various nooks and crannies, or the memoirs, paintings, and academic treatises we compose so that we can share our stories and ideas. Everyone wants the world to take note of their living, to feel that when their flesh and bone has faded away, they are still significant enough to be remembered. Many of you knew Anne Simlak. Some of you never had the chance to meet her. Anne was our youth director until she died at the tender age of 29 after battling a reoccurrence of the brain cancer that for many years had been in remission. She was a strong and courageous woman, and along with a wealth of memories, Anne left us a tangible object, this glowing menorah. And through its light, we can experience and acknowledge her time with us. Anyone who knows even a little bit about science realizes the stars we see in winter skies are no longer living. Yet there they are, lighting our path on dark December nights. Some of you will even tell your children that when Grandpa or Grandma or any other living being they care about dies, they will become a star. That the miracles of our lives, the people and animals we love and who give us meaning, continue to be part of the interdependent web which we hold so dear. The decorated stars we hang on our church holiday tree during these holy days are also symbolic of life no longer living. Because no matter how fleeting, no matter how geographically far removed or complicated or challenging or deeply felt our relationships have been, no life should ever be forgotten. This commitment to not forgetting plays itself out in the fragments of memory we place upon the altars of our universe. For remembering is the most significant contribution we make in our efforts to heal the world. If you haven't already purchased a star from the Caring Committee, I'll have some after the service. Then, beyond our star-hanging solstice and Christmas Eve services, beyond the days that any physical item can last, even a menorah that in ancient times held mystical and magical oil for 8 nights instead of one, we will go forward. In January, a new year and a new beginning will arrive. And Mark and I will take down your stars and pack them away for yet another season. But they won't stay contained in the boxes we store in a dusty church corner somewhere. After we leave the room, I know with all the faith one heart can summon, these ritualized and public expressions of love and caring will wing their way heavenward. And then, without a shadow of a doubt, whenever we look into the night sky, we too will become one with the essence of all that has been and all that evermore shall be. Please join me as we hang our stars on the church, and Anne will play Sure on This Shining Night.